This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Call this meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee to order, and I would ask that the Secretary call the roll.
Senators Blair,
here.
Kennedy, Nordstrom, Schoenbeck,
aye.
Stalzer, Rush,
aye.
Russell,
aye.
Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, we'll go ahead and get started then. We do have from last night already, I presume?
Yes.
I hope I did. Let me see here. Looks like I have two tasks to perform. One down, two down. Okay. So I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Well, ladies, why don't you come forward and tell us who you are and where you're going.
Hi, my name is Taylor Storbakken, and I'm a junior at the Britton Heckla High School, and currently I'm undecided for after high school.
Very good.
Good morning, I am Tiana Cheddar. I am a junior at Doland, and once I graduate, I plan to go to college for social work.
Okay, any preference on where? Okay. Well, thank you again for helping us. I don't know that any of you got tagged with being here till 10 at night, but we really appreciate those pages also. Well, we have quite a bill load here to dispense with, so I guess we'll get right into it. House Bill 1089, to provide for the discharge of certain persons who receive a suspended imposition of sentence for a misdemeanor. Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Satizon for the Unified Judicial System. This bill was brought forth by our clerk of courts in order to really streamline the process, and I'll just provide a little bit of background. So a suspended imposition of sentence really means that a person pleads guilty but is not convicted of an offense. And so after they plead guilty, the court will impose certain conditions, which may or may not include supervised probation. If that person complies, that information then is brought back to the clerk and then to the court for the court to essentially enter the formal discharge, which would then trigger the sealing of that case. That's really the benefit to a suspended imposition of sentence. If you complete the terms, the case is sealed, and so there's no longer a public record that would show that case. And so based on a fairly recent change in 2016, the legislature made it clear that a person is entitled to one suspended imposition of sentence that's for a misdemeanor conviction and one that's for a felony conviction. And so the change before you today pulls in the language about the misdemeanor conviction that was added to make it clear that this process applies both to the misdemeanor and the felony. And that it also, because I think what one thing that change has done is made it so that it is more common now to see suspended impositions of sentence granted on misdemeanor cases. Before, that defendant had the choice, should I pursue it for a misdemeanor case or should I hold off for the felony? And, you know, they had that decision to make. So just for instance, last year we had 2,216 misdemeanor cases where there were suspended imps granted current. And then that same year there were 1,106 felony cases. And so one of the big differences, unless you're in Pennington County, which is our only place in the state that supervises misdemeanor cases with a formal probation officer, many of those, all the rest of those misdemeanor cases would be, the court would provide certain conditions to meet. That might be the payment of court costs, fines, fees, restitution, including, it could include a chemical dependency evaluation. It could comply with a treatment recommendation, whatever those might be. Once that's completed, since a probation officer is not supervising those misdemeanor cases in almost all instances, we need the defendant or the defense attorney to provide that information back to the court that the conditions have been satisfied. That then triggers the clerk of court to provide that to the judge, who then can review the matter and enter an appropriate order if they believe it's been complied with. So what House Bill 1089 does is really recognize that, pull in the language to reflect the current statutes related to the misdemeanor and the felony, and then to make it clear that you're entitled to the prior language was may occur only once with respect to any person. But we wanted to make that clear. That really means once with respect to any person for a felony and for a misdemeanor. So those are the changes. I think it's really meant to be a procedural cleanup to make sure that we get the information back and can proceed with those cases. And I'm certainly happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1089. Further proponents. Hearing none, any opponent testimony? Hearing none, any questions by members of the committee? Action. Senator Rush.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to pass.
Second.
And we have a second by Senator Blair. Any discussion on that motion? I'd ask the secretary to call the roll.
Senators Blair?
Aye.
Kennedy is excused. Nordstrup's excused. Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Stalzer is excused. Rush?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, you have 4 ayes and 3 excused.
Motion passes. I'm going to go ahead and certify that for the consent calendar if they're without objection.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schoenbeck.
Personal privilege.
Certainly.
I don't think we recognize the senior government class from Sunshine Bible Academy, although I texted their picture to a local attorney there, and he said it looks like drug court graduation. But he's apparently friends of theirs, but he knows them apparently.
Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Hopefully you'll get some entertainment today. I don't know. Some of these bills look like they're pretty dry, so we'll see what happens. The next bill on the agenda is House Bill 1103, an act to authorize the forensic medical examination of certain minor victims without parental or guardian consent. Representative Reed, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Tim Reed, District 7. Today I bring before you House Bill 1103, and this is an act to allow a minor age 16 or older to consent to a forensic medical examination. Today, let me back up and say this correctly. A forensic medical examination is considered a medical procedure. Since it's a medical procedure, you need to be 18 to consent. Otherwise, you have to have a guardian or a parent. And so what we're doing is saying with this bill that a minor age 16 or older can consent to the examination. It's really important that we get sexual assault examinations completed. It increases the likelihood of a conviction. It can catch serial rapists before they reoffend. Victims get medical care they need. And the process itself helps victims with their psychological healing after an assault. But those that are under the age of 18 are at a higher risk of victimization. From 2012 to 2018 in South Dakota, 44.6% of victims of forcible rape were under the age of 18 years old. This is compared to being 24.7% of the population. And those are the ones we know about. The other issue is there's, when you're at any point being involved in a sexual assault, you know, there can be shame, but especially for somebody that's younger. And the ability for someone 16 years or older to be able to go in and have the examination completed can be easier since their parent doesn't have to find out. Now, I've talked to a lot of the sexual assault nurse examiners, and they say the first thing they do is you have to talk to your parents. You have to start talking about this. So it's not that they're saying don't tell your parent, you know, but they are working with them. So it'll get them in, make sure that the kit can get done, and then start talking about the healing process of it. It's also important to know that the majority of those rapes I talked about under the age of 18 are completed by a family member, like a sibling, spouse. That's 47% of those cases, followed by a boyfriend, which can be 36%. Now, this bill does have in it that the physician, hospital, or clinic shall take reasonable step to notify a minor's parent or guardian that the examination has taken place, unless the parent or guardian is a suspected perpetrator. And so it does say to the hospital, you do need to contact the guardian or their parents, unless it's you think that it's the guardian or parent that is the perpetrator of the rape. It's always good to look at other states, what's happening around us when it comes to other statutes, how they handle this. And we found that most states actually allow, they don't even define 16 years old. They actually look more at can they consent. Wyoming just says that any minor can. Missouri also is any minor can consent. Ohio, Kansas, and Arizona has a limit of 12 years of age or older in their statutes. So this is a very important bill to make sure that we're helping those under the age of 18 that have been sexually assaulted, and it also helps us catch the perpetrators. And so I would ask for your support of House Bill 1103. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Reed. Thank you for all your work on this. Further proponent testimony. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I'm Diana Miller, registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Network Against Family Violence and Sexual Assault. And I want to commend Representative Reed because we've been working with him throughout the summer on a package of bills. This is one of them, dealing with forensic examinations for minors, for the disabled, and other bills to protect victims. And we've had a variety of people in our coalition, and he's gone about it in absolutely remarkable fashion to bring everybody to the table and agree that protections in the law need to occur at the same time we must protect the victim. We were all astounded by hearing that the age group of between 16 and 19, that 44% are more likely to be raped or experience a sexual assault. That's just astounding to me and very unfortunate. The problem this bill does address is we protect, number one, the victim because of the psychological care that is needed when you have a 16 to 18-year-old person that isn't under our law currently allowed to give informed consent. There's a lot of psychological issue. There is a psychological issue there. And then the second one is the confidentiality. Some people have asked, you know, if they say, well, I can't let anybody know, I don't want to have the exam. Folks, we absolutely need to have the exam to protect, number one, the young person from any type of disease or anything such as that, and get the perpetrator. However, we do have trained nurses and emergency room personnel that are very experienced at talking through this with the victim. And that's absolutely necessary because it says in here we'll make every reasonable effort to contact the parents unless they are the perpetrator or the guardian. So the protections are in there for both sides. I think also, unfortunately, this is what's happening in our society more and more, and we need to find ways to strike a balance. So we not only get the exam done, the important thing to me is we get the exam done and then deal with the issue of talking to their parents, because it is very important. But I also want to make sure that the exam is done. So, Mr. Chairman, I would respectfully ask that you pass House Bill 1103 and put in another protection in law for the victims of sexual assault. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1103. Further proponents. Any opponent testimony? Hearing none. Any questions by members of the committee? Seeing none. Action. Senator Rush.
I would move do pass.
Second.
We have a second by Senator Schoenbeck. Any discussion on that motion? Senator Rush.
I think this is a really good common sense as by the proponents in this case. I think they, in this bill, they made their case very well.
And thank you, Representative Reed, for I wrote down all those numbers because that was astounding. And the fact that you've gone out there and done all that work is great. So thank you for all of your efforts. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'd ask the Secretary call the roll on the do pass motion.
Senators Blair?
Aye.
Kennedy is excused. Nordstrup's excused. Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, you have 5 ayes and 2 excused.
Motion passes. Okay. That would be great. Yeah, the next one is House Bill 1108, excuse me, an act to adopt the Uniform Civil Remedies for Unauthorized Disclosures of Intimate Images Act. Senator Rush. Senator Schoenbeck.
Did our last bill go on consent?
It should have, shouldn't it? I'll certify that for consent. Thank you. Thank you for calling my attention to that.
I'm just happy.
I talked to the governor's office, and it looks like they want Senator Schoenbeck to carry that bill we had last night. So I'm very thankful to Senator Schoenbeck. Yeah, don't get into that. Okay, Senator Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Senator Art Rush, representing District 17, and I'm here on behalf of House Bill 1108. I urge you to pass that. This is an act to adopt the Uniform Civil Remedies for Unauthorized Disclosure of Intimate Images Act. I'm one of South Dakota's delegates on the Uniform Laws Commission, and the Uniform Laws Commission is a group of, 400 or 500 lawyers nationwide who study different topics, and they generally have 20 or 30 different topics on the calendar. And after 2 years of passing at the convention, they can approve the uniform laws. And this is one of the uniform laws, and I don't remember how many they have. It's many hundreds of possible uniform laws. But this is one that is becoming more and more of an issue, and this is the Uniform Civil Remedies for Unauthorized Disclosure of Intimate Images Act. And what this does is create a civil cause of action. There's no criminal part to this, but a civil cause of action for two different things. One of them is if a person who can be identified on these intimate images and who suffers harm from a person's intentional disclosure can bring a civil action for that harm that they suffered from that disclosure of the intimate acts or intimate images. The second is for a threatened disclosure. If somebody's threatening somebody that if you don't do what I want, we're going to disclose these intimate images that I have of you. So there's really two different causes of action. There's a lot of definitions in here which probably wouldn't be appropriate for a family audience, and I've gone through that. It makes sense on there, and I would urge the passage of that and would stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1108. Further proponents? Seeing none, any opponent testimony? Also seeing none, are there any questions by members of the committee? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion. Senator Blair.
I move do pass the House Bill 1108.
And we have a second?
Second.
By Senator Schoenbeck. Any discussion on that motion?
I do appreciate the judge's help in keeping us current on this. I think this is very, very good legislation. I thank you for bringing it to us, Judge.
Further discussion? Hearing none, I'd ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senators Blair?
Aye.
Kennedy is excused. Nordstrom's excused. Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, you have 5 ayes and 2 excused.
Motion passes. We'll go ahead and put that on the consent calendar if there's no objection. The next bill is an act to revise provisions regarding the termination of a lease by a victim of alleged domestic abuse, House Bill 1123. Okay. Okay. Well, we'll just take a minute then until she gets here. Can you? That might be ambitious.
This isn't the house.
It might take that long, but we better. Yeah. Well, we welcome you to the committee, and we haven't waited very long, so this is just fine.
But did you tell her we killed the last 3 bills?
Everything's passed out on consent today, so hopefully you're batting well, too. Senator Castleberry, good morning. Proponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Senator Jessica Castleberry from District 35, representing Eastern Rapid City, Rapid Valley, and Box Elder. House Bill 1123 is being brought to you today, courtesy of the hard work of Representative Mike Dietrich and at the request of victims of domestic abuse in South Dakota. House Bill 1123 revises provisions for victims of domestic abuse who have been issued a court protection order and might need to move in order to remain safe. This bill would remove the early termination penalty of a lease. However, the deposit and any other cleanup or damage fees would remain in place. For 24 years, VAWA, or the Violence Against Women Act, from the federal government has taken this role and protected the domestic abuse victim, but this has not been renewed and is currently in limbo. House Bill 1123 provides protection needed for victims if the perpetrator knows where they live and protection for property managers and owners for fair housing claims. Victims do need to have a valid protection order and provide written notice to the landlord. I myself have been a landlord, and there's a litany of circumstances that can lead to tenants disappearing, and it can be very difficult to collect on those accounts. I personally believe that someone fleeing domestic abuse for their safety and that of their family is a small inconvenience when compared to knowing that you, as a landlord, may have saved a life. Just as a side note, I do think that any way that we can help someone who has been suffering from domestic abuse is something that we should all be taking into consideration. And when it comes to the end of the day, a protection order is just a piece of paper. And we want to make sure that people are able to protect themselves, maybe move into a different place where they can have a big dog if they need it. And maybe, if I can add, and maybe just instead of using that early buyout on that lease, maybe they can get themselves a gun if they feel so inclined. So with that, I think that it's important that we have our residents feeling safe, to feel like they can provide for their families and not be put at a hardship if they need to leave for their safety, and that we need to support their ability to protect themselves. I appreciate your consideration of House Bill 1123, and I stand by for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Further proponent testimony. Hello again.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I'm Diana Miller, registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Network Against Family Violence and Sexual Assault. And I commend both Representative Dietrich and Senator Castleberry for their work on this. And we've talked with landlords in that, and most landlords are very cooperative on a situation such as this. However, when you put the victim in a situation where they need to get out of their lease because there's a time constraint and they don't want their perpetrator to find them, and you need to do it very, very quickly. And consequently, that's why the reasonable time after request and all of that. And we understand that. But it's an economic situation to us. If they're forced to stay in that location because they can't afford to get back their or pay their rent or they don't want to let the deposit go, there's an issue here. And we're jeopardizing the victim once again because, believe me, the perpetrators, based on a control ID and control factor, will find the victim. They will find him. There's no doubt in my mind. And I think this is another protection, and it's been amended thus that it protects both the tenant and the landlord because they have to be informed in writing and all that kind of thing. So they don't. We're not asking that they lose money, and I don't think they want to keep the victim there. I think this is just good protection for both parties, landlords and victims. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I respectfully ask that you pass House Bill 1123, and thank you for the time. And I apologize for running in and out. But I have bills over in House Judiciary, too. They can't finish their work. I don't understand that. So I'm trying to get through that one, and I understand this committee is very efficient on getting through their work. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If you were around last night, you would think differently. We almost had a mutiny. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1123. Further proponents? Any opponents? Seeing none? Any questions by members of the committee? Also, hearing none, action. Senator Schoenbeck? We have a second by Senator Blair. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, I'd ask the secretary to call the roll.
Senators Blair?
Aye.
Kennedy is excused. Nordstrup's excused. Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, you have 5 ayes and 2 excused.
Motion passes. We'll put it on consent if you'd like. Okay. We'll certify that it'll go on consent. Okay. Representative Hammack said that he might be just a little bit late, so if we could move his to the end, I think. Or is he? Okay. Very good. Then House Bill 1138, Senator Stalzer.
Yes, Senator Jim Stalzer, District 11, Sioux Falls. House Bill 1138 is just a cleanup on our enhanced pistol permit process. Currently, someone that is former law enforcement could just apply. This would say that they need to have their, if they have their law enforcement training and upgrade, and most even retired, go once a year to keep their law enforcement credentials active so that they can carry without needing a permit. But in some instances, they do want to get an enhanced permit. The way the current law is reading, they could potentially have been fired 5-10 years ago, never had an update since, and be eligible for the permit. What this says is if they have had the training and upgrade within a year, they can use their law enforcement training to just automatically get the permit and not have to take the normal class that Representative Hammack and Jensen and I teach. So it's an attempt to bring it in line, because with our classes, they're good for a year. If they've had the law enforcement update within a year, they would be able to use that in lieu of the classes. So with that, I would ask for your support.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony, Senator Stalzer. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1138. Further proponents? Hearing none. Any opponent testimony? Also hearing none. Any questions of Senator Stalzer? Action.
I would move do pass, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
We have a second by Senator Stalzer. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, ask the Secretary to call the roll on the do pass motion.
Senators Blair?
Aye.
Kennedy is excused. Northrup's excused. Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, you have 5 ayes and 2 excused.
Motion passes. We will put that on the consent calendar. Okay.
Is this an all-time record?
This is. This is wonderful. Okay. Now is where we're getting down to brass tacks. Senator or Representative Jensen, an act to extend the termination date for Juvenile Justice Public Safety Oversight Council. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Representative Kevin Jensen from District 16. And this has my name on it, but this is actually a bill being brought by the Juvenile Justice Reform Oversight Council. Because of a timing issue trying to get the bill in, we had a last-minute meeting, and I just volunteered to put the bill in under my name. So this really is the council bringing this. I'm going to introduce it, and then I'll bring the real testimony right behind me. But I just want to make sure that was clear, that this is coming from the council. And the other thing I'd like to mention, that this is actually the second part of a two-part bill. 1206, which you'll hear tomorrow, is where the rubber hits the road. This bill today just asks to extend, because we're moving the pendulum, we're changing the juvenile justice guidelines a little bit. This just asks to extend the council for a little bit. And I will let Mr. Sabazon continue.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Further proponent testimony, Mr. Sabazon.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Sabazon, State Court Administrator. I've served as the chair of the council since its inception. Our first meeting was in September of 2015, and so we're quickly approaching the five-year mark. And we believe as a council we've had a lot of discussions, and we'll probably carry this conversation through to tomorrow. But as part of our work, you know, we've heard a lot of the frustrations, and have really tried to be the body that takes in all that information and tries to work towards solutions and provide information and keep the process moving forward. Our group this last year, we had 4 meetings. We went out to various locations across the state. We had meetings where we had well over 50 people there that would show up and provide input and information, and those included both legislators, school representatives, law enforcement, probation officers, juvenile corrections agents, state's attorneys, and just members that are interested from the public. And so we really feel like there is a continued need for a group that can monitor how our juvenile justice reforms are working and be responsive to those. I would hope that would be viewed as a positive thing that perhaps would help this legislature get information and bring recommendations. That's our goal as an oversight council. And so we would propose a 3-year extension. This is really the entire cost of our council over the last several years. Our budget has been probably about $5,000. The way it works is that the legislature appoints members, the attorney general, the chief justice, the governor, and then whoever appoints that entity is responsible for the travel and reimbursement. And really our only costs have been associated with if we don't have a room available to rent a room at a convention center or someplace. So it's been fairly inexpensive, but we also feel like the work that council is doing is important and would ask for your support in that continuing. So with that, I certainly stand by for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Further proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Christy Bunkers, the Director of Juvenile Services for the Department of Corrections, and I'm also a member of the Oversight Council. You've already heard about the council and the busy year that they've had working across the state in a series of deep dives. This is a straightforward bill, so I'm going to be real brief. This would simply allow us to continue to do that important work. What I also would want to just add is, from my perspective, the Oversight Council provides an important venue for the ongoing collaborations. The key state agencies that are involved that have a statutory role related to juvenile justice or service provision to justice-involved youth It allows us to work together, and it keeps us out of our silos, and allows us to work together more effectively. By allowing an extension of 3 years, this would also include required annual publication of the annual report that we produce each year. And that includes the key performance measures that all three agencies are accountable for, UJS, DSS, and the Department of Corrections, that we're required to measure and report out on. And, you know, that certainly encourages a focus on continued improvement across the programs that impact young people and their families, and also allows us to continue to prioritize data-driven decision-making as it relates to juvenile justice policy. So this bill just makes good sense, and would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Further proponent testimony. Senator, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Senator Wayne Steinhauer, District 9. I'm looking for something to do, and I hope this doesn't submarine the bill. I've got big shoes to follow because Senator Alan Solano used to be the Senate representative, and you know, things happen for a reason. One of my school districts asked me to take a tour of a couple of facilities, McCrossin's Boys Ranch and Sequel, which happened to be in my district, and as I was leaving, I was thinking, gee, I need to get a little bit more involved. Also hearing from the sheriff about concerns about kids, maybe things being too lenient. Well, there's got to be some answers there, and thinking I should get involved. Wouldn't you know it, a few days later, Leader Langer asked if I'd step up. And you know what? I can't do too much damage if we don't extend this. So I'm hoping that you would pass this bill and give me some time to be involved. And I'm looking forward to it. So I ask for your favorable consideration of House Bill 1207. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Further proponent testimony? Hearing none. Any opponent testimony? Also hearing none. Any questions by members of the committee? Action. Senator Rush.
I would move to pass.
Second.
We have a second by Senator Stalzer. Any discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schoenbeck.
For 35 years, I haven't liked where we've been going with this juvenile stuff, taking it away from the local state's attorneys. And I understand I'm the curmudgeon on this, but I think I'll stick with my no position on these quote-unquote reforms, even if it's the only one in the whole dang legislature.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'd ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senators Blair?
Aye.
Kennedy is excused. Nordstrup's excused. Schoenbeck?
No.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, you have 4 ayes, 1 nay, and 2 excused.
Motion passes.
I think he just did that to prevent all of our bills from going on consent.
Yes, I think so. Okay. I think that concludes our agenda, so I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
By Senator Rush and second by Senator Stalzer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.